Welcome to the Chicken Yogi Show, the podcast that helps you find your inner power by connecting you to self and nature. Hosted by Kit Kailstow, the Chicken Yogi. Broadcasting from their homestead, Kit helps you find and honor your inner power so you can step into your light and shine. Their focus is on trauma-sensitive chronic wellness. Listen to everything from wellness talk to deep dives on spiritual topics, all designed to honor you and your unique journey. And now this week's show.
Welcome to this week's episode of the Chicken Yogi Show. This week, I want to talk about the topic of when is anxiety not anxiety? And there's two things I want to say about that right off the top. First of all, I feel like in some regards, we can substitute depression or other negative effect, and I say negative effect in a psychological way, meaning negative emotion, mental illnesses. And then the other thing I want to say is, regardless of what I tell you in this podcast, I want you to make sure that you do seek the care of a professional in the mental health field, because nothing I'm going to say is going to apply as medical advice. And I just want to make that clear. I am a student of psychology. I am not a doctor, and nothing I say here will be medical advice. So why talk about it at all? In this podcast, I want to relate to you my story and what I have learned in my years dealing with anxiety and depression, because I feel like by sharing my story, I'm going to shed light on a couple of things that happen within the mental health industry. I also think it's important to start out by basically saying that here in the United States, for a great many of us, mental health services are trash. And that is not any shade being thrown at the many wonderful providers, the many wonderful therapists, the many wonderful psychologists who are providing this service. Rather, the system itself does not serve either the people working in it, nor does the system itself serve the patients. There's been way a lot of information written on social media, written in news media, about the for-profit motive of American healthcare, and that plays a large role into it. There's also a lot of primary care physicians who, when their patient mentions something to them, writes out a prescription for a mental health medicine without making appropriate referrals. And while at many times, you know, when it happened to me, that came from a place of caring, of wanting to help. The first time I was prescribed antidepressants was after my father died. And even now, where it's been over 10 years since Dad passed away, it's still hella rough on me. Dad was my rock. I still miss him to this day. And so I have no doubt that that doctor prescribing Zoloft to me did so from a place of, hey, here's somebody who's struggling with grief. It has been 6 months since her father's death. She's still struggling with it. This is getting into depression territory. Let me prescribe her something that has been known to help. And that is the mindset that comes from a lot of providers. So when I talk about the system being trash, it's the actual insurance company, pharmaceutical, you know, out-of-pocket deductibles, max out-of-pocket expenses, co-pays, the entire socio-structure, economic structure of our healthcare system isn't good for any patient's mental or physical health at all. So with that out of the way, something that has been on my mind a lot, and even before I started this college semester, it was on my mind as something that I've been thinking about. And this college semester, I'm taking abnormal psychology, and something that abnormal psychology really brought home. And if you're not familiar with that class, it's basically a guided tour through the DSM, the Diagnostic Standards Manual, where they tell you what is happening with a mental health situation, what the criteria for diagnosis are, how to read differential notes, how to do that, and then move forward with that. You were supposed to take this knowledge into our training as clinical psychologists. one of the things that this semester has really brought home to me is that I don't want to be in a system that pathologizes socioeconomic problems. And I knew I threw a lot of big words at you, so let me break that down a bit if you're not familiar with those terms. There are a great many diagnoses in the DSM-5, first of all, that help people and that get them to the aid and the help that they need, which is why I say, please speak with a mental health professional. Please seek treatment for your illnesses. I am not anti-treatment. I am not anti-medication. I currently take anti-anxiety medicine. But as I'm going to share with you through the course of this podcast, the reason why I take it, I feel, has less to do with the biochemical imbalance in my brain, which is kind of the theory that we've all been taught. I remember the Zoloft commercials, the little bouncing marshmallow that got rained on, and then he bounced and had some friends, you know, met up with his little marshmallow friends, or they weren't really marshmallows, but it was just this white circle with a black outline and two eyes. It looked like a bouncing marshmallow. Anyway, you know, that's what we kind of been told, that you don't have enough serotonin in your brain. That's why you're depressed. You need more GABA, G-A-B-A. You need more dopamine. You need more of these neurotransmitters. And just like the levels of anything else in our body, I think a lot of us operate on different levels of that. I mean, if we take body temperature, you take 10 people's temperature, you may very well come up with 10 different numbers, and those numbers may not all be 98.6. My spouse and I, when we were doing some temperature checks for COVID, and we have different baselines that we run at, and that doesn't make either one of us unhealthy. It makes us unique individuals. Likewise, with the level of neurotransmitters in your brain, whatever level you have, there are ways to boost it. There are natural ways, there are medication ways to boost those levels of those neurotransmitters. For example, yoga and meditation, two things that are close to my heart, help raise GABA. And that has been proven in scientific studies. So I feel like I'm rambling, but the truth is we all have different levels, and it's not like a car where it doesn't matter what car you check the oil on. As long as that oil line says F, you know you're good. And that's the way, at least in America, and I believe the rest of the world, from talking with people in the UK and Canada, the way that our blood levels, the way that our health works, is that they take your blood, you get your results back, and you can see, you know, okay, your white blood cells are at this level. This is normal. This isn't. Your thyroid, your TSH, your hormone levels, your T4s, that is at one level. It should be at a different level, or, hey, your level is within the normal range. Something that a lot of people who are assigned female at birth or people who identify as women will tell you is that just because their thyroid levels fall into that normal range, they still often benefit from supplementation through medication. So I think we can all say that even within different parts of our body, the biochemical levels that are described as quote unquote normal may not necessarily be the optimal level for that individual. Now that I've gotten that out of the way, how does this apply to anxiety for me personally? In order for me to share that with you, let me back up a bit and talk about how I obtained my anxiety, my generalized anxiety disorder diagnosis. And that was, I had a panic attack. Scared the shit out of me. I mean, pardon the French, but I woke up in the middle of the night. I still had my pulse oximeter that my mother used. Check my pulse. It's like 130. My heart is pounding. My chest is burning. I feel like I'm dying. I also know I live in the middle of nowhere in the Ozarks. It'll take at least an hour for an ambulance to get here. If they send first responders, it might take 20 or 30 minutes. My husband would not be able to drive us into town in that length of time. It's a half an hour drive. and I would have to get him up. He'd have to get dressed. There's just no way that we could get into town before an ambulance could come. And so I'm sitting there feeling like I'm having a heart attack. And I think, okay, we can't afford an ambulance. Again, the American healthcare system is trash. Can't afford an ambulance. Having had experiences with the local healthcare system, because I have a diagnosis of fibromyalgia, I basically have a big scarlet F on my chart. They don't treat anything, even things that show up in the blood work as below optimum levels, they won't even treat those. And so I figure, okay, I could pay several hundred dollars. And I had gone through all this with my mother as well, which played a role with that. You know, Mom owed $900 for each of her ambulance rides. And I, you know, because I wrote Mom's checks under Mom's supervision, of course, but because I helped her pay her bills and manage all of that after she moved in with us, I was acutely aware of the cost of an ambulance. I'm like, so I can pay several hundred dollars. I can go to the nearest hospital to be told, oh, it's all in your head, go home. And then they would bill me several thousand dollars for the privilege of telling me to go home. So I'm sitting there having a panic attack, freaking out and thinking, you know, it'd be better if this was just a heart attack and I just died, which is a horrible thing to think about. Because again, I was thinking about, you know, the homestead, the horses, the cats, the chickens. I take care of my husband to some extent, my spouse. And so it's like, well, you know, if I die, who's going to take care of him? Who's going to handle everything that I handle for him? And eventually my heart rate calmed down. I realized I was jolted awake by one heck of a heartburn episode that became a panic attack or vice versa. And because I had a regularly scheduled appointment, I mentioned to my doctor, you know, hey, this happened. What's up? And my doctor referred me to behavioral health and they had me on an intake. And soon before I knew it, I was seen by somebody who said, oh yeah, that's a panic attack. You have anxiety. And I have a worrisome personality, or I did. I'm working on changing that. But I'd had a very nervous and worried personality, mostly from being the one who took care of everything all the time. And the one that everybody turned to that said, hey, this happened, let's fix it. And so with all of that in mind, I was given an anxiety diagnosis. And I was given a pill that helps the anxiety. And I'm not going to lie, it helps the anxiety. That was about 3 years ago. So every 3 months I go in for refills. 2 years we did this for 2 years. And it's like, you know, everything's going, how you sleeping? Okay, okay, okay. He added one more med at that same time for what I call my heart thumpies or the heart palpitations that happen with panic attacks and anxiety. And then he added a sleeping medicine, one that my mother took and I was familiar with. I don't take that anymore because I don't like taking sleeping medicines. Things like that tend to hit me hard and I wake up kind of feeling like I'm a little groggy, like maybe that's what a hangover feels like. So I don't like my sleeping medicine, so I don't take it very often. But again, 2 years, everything okay, okay, visit's done. And being billed several hundred dollars for that. Now, we flash forward, and I start getting more involved in the online chronic illness community because as somebody with the scarlet F of fibromyalgia, I was, you know, looking for support from my peers, as they tell you to do, and I discovered the autistic community, which if you were the bookish girl who was bullied like hell in school, to the point that I graduated a year early to avoid the bullies, who never fit in, who never did anything right, who has very specific and very unique interests. I'm a horse girl and a chicken girl. And so, or I was at the time a horse girl and chicken girl. You know, these very specific strong interests, you can see, I think, where we're going with this. I discovered an assessment online. It's called the RAADSR assessment. It is one of the higher quality rated assessments for autism. It has been scientifically studied, scientifically proven. I took it and scored high enough that it made my eyes pop open. Because every time I read about what an autistic assigned female at birth person presents as, I was like, hey, that's me. How did they get in my head? I spoke to my therapist about it and gave my therapist the assessment and said, hey, you know, I'm not fishing here. I'm not trying to collect diagnosis like you can collect, you know, golden Willy Wonka tickets. But I really think this explains a lot of things. And when I start thinking about it, it explains a hell of a lot of things. And gosh, it would be so nice if I had something that explained my unique way of looking at the world, my unique expressions, to the point where I can tell those bullies that still live in my head from time to time to go F off. So she looked at it. She said, well, let me research this a bit. She researched that, came back at the next appointment, and she said, yeah, I think you're on the right track here. And then she also said these words. She said, I cannot give you a diagnosis. We would have to get you in with a psychiatrist to go through a lot of assessments and testing, which is true, and that is correct. However, this particular health system does not diagnose adults with autism. Sit with that for a moment. So imagine if you went to the doctor with a broken arm or a broken leg. They did x-rays. The doctor came back and said, yeah, that's broken. But I'm sorry, we only diagnose children with broken legs that only happen in PE class. Yeah, I think you can see you'd be a little peeved off. You'd be a lot peeved off. And that combined with what I was learning in my abnormal psych class, really over the course, well, I started this semester in January, and it's April, mid-April when I'm recording this. So basically, the first quarter of 2022, I really started thinking, okay, is this anxiety, is this medicine helping me? And here is what I came up with. Yes, it helps me, but I only need it Monday through Friday. Think about that. If I really had generalized anxiety, bouncing off the wall, freaking out anxiety, which I presented with after my panic attack, and I had had for a while because, again, I was dealing with a bunch of things taking care of my mother. I was dealing with a bunch of things after my mother passed away in 2019, one of which being an exceeding amount of guilt, which is very normal of caretakers of people who pass away. And I just kept thinking, you know, oh my God, there should have been something I should have done. And I think we all feel that way. And I still, you know, feel that way, although the rational part of my mind also knows, hey, no, mom was really, really sick. I was doing the best I could. I was going above and beyond what I could do as a non-medically trained person giving care to my mother. She was a nurse, so she trained me, and she's a good teacher. But the thing is, if we kind of bring that back to my anxiety medicine, because this is not a podcast about my mother, you know, I was like, wait a minute. I go on the weekends when it's just me and the chickens and the horses, and sometimes a trip into town for groceries, which is not that fun. But I can go on the weekends and I can forget my medicine and not have the same physical and emotional, you know, chest pain, heart thumping symptoms of my anxiety. Well, what does that tell you? If you only need medicine for specific days of the week, well, then you think about what are you doing on those days of the week. And the story gets even more interesting. I was working two jobs and I had the opportunity to leave the second job, which was stressful. And I was looking to get out of there anyway. But I also, you know, didn't think it was bad compared to the first job. Well, let me tell you something. Within 2 weeks of leaving that second job, my blood pressure dropped 20 points. Yeah. So obviously that was having an effect on me. Likewise, my need for my anxiety medicine, because I was doing that job 7 days a week. It was a contract gig. I just, you know, logged in and took care of things a couple of times a day. I did not need any medicine on the days that I wasn't working because I didn't have that stress in my life. What does that tell me about my anxiety? What I realized is that for me personally, as a assigned female at birth, autistic individual living in this world, that even though there are many good things I can say about my current job, the truth is, I don't have anxiety, I have capitalism. Capitalism causes anxiety. And I believe if we look at a lot of the issues, capitalism causes depression. And if we look at a lot of these things, then we're going to find that we are medicating people, which is the fear, you know, that they had. There was a big scare several years ago about children and psychiatry for children. You know, they felt like that, well, they were medicating kids into compliance. Well, I think we're medicating adults into compliance. And again, I am not anti-medication. Medication is helping me. Medication helped me in the past. I now know, however, that it is not so much a biochemical or thought process issue. It's not a cognitive behavioral, or biochemical issue that's causing my anxiety. It is a socioeconomic issue. And that's why I say that my anxiety is not anxiety. My anxiety is not caused by my thought patterns. My anxiety is not caused by my behavior. My anxiety is not caused by the chemicals in my brain. It is caused by the conditions under which we are meant to live. And I feel like I just dropped a heavy load of social justice on you. And I very much appreciate, if you've listened this far, that you have listened through to this episode of this podcast and that you have thought about it. And you might have very strong opinions about what I have just told you. You might have those strong opinions about me. You might have those strong opinions about my words. You might have strong opinions about the very concepts. I understand, and it's okay. Because there's a couple of reasons why I feel like I needed to do this podcast. And one of the biggest reasons is because we are conditioned. There is so much internalized conditioning that you have and I have. We all have it. There's things that we were told by our parents and our grandparents. There are things that we are told by school, by what we're supposed to do. What does a quote-unquote good person look like in our society? And I feel like we have to unpack that if we're going to tap into the magic inside ourselves. And we have to unpack that if we're going to fully realize the dreams of our heart. Because when I sat down today, I was going to do a podcast about dreams of your heart and getting in touch with your inner magic. And I realized I just shifted from social justice to what may be considered a woo-woo. So again, if you're still with me, awesome. You know, thanks for hanging in there. But I think it's important that on a very basic level, we unpack our thought processes and what we were told, so we can figure out what the heck we want. So we can figure out what we're doing in life and what impact we want to make in the world. Because for too many of us, we are going through our days, wake up, go to work, work for somebody. If it's Friday, if it's the 1st or the 15th of a month, get a paycheck, come home, take care of our family if you have kids or an elder person in your family to take care of, try to take care of yourself. Ha ha. How many of us really have time to take care of ourselves? Go to sleep. Maybe if we're lucky, get 7 or 8 hours of sleep. And, you know, our little Fitbit or our little exercise band goes, hooray, good job, you got sleep. Get up and do the whole thing all over again. We live for Friday. Friday comes. We spend our Saturday and Sunday. And again, this is U.S. only. I understand things are done very different in Europe. This might be U.S. and Canada only. But I understand they have different, you know, different countries in Europe have different work weeks, which is definitely an idea that we should revisit. But you live for Friday, you get off work at 5 o'clock on Friday, and yeah, you know, hooray, it's Friday. Thank God it's Friday. TGIF. And then on the weekend, you do all the things you didn't have time to do for the week. You crash into bed Sunday night, and oh, hell, it's Monday morning again, and you've got to do it all over again. And that kind of life does not allow the time and the space and the energy required for deep thoughts and deep contemplations. That type of life does not allow us to sit and say, you know what? Is this really what you want to do? Are you doing the work of your heart? The Buddhists call it the right work, the right job, the right fit. Are you doing the right work? Or if you think about it, does your company really have serious ethical issues in how they treat their workers and how they treat the global community? And do you really feel like you're doing something good at the end of an 8-hour workday or a 10-hour workday or, heaven forbid, a 12-hour workday? Do you really feel that what you're doing is helping you achieve your highest and best purpose? And again, you might be thinking, you know, I don't have the luxury of having a highest or best purpose. You know, kid, I need to go and earn a living so I can feed my family. And my gosh, I get it. Oh my God, do I get that? Because I thought that too. And then I had a panic attack at 2 a.m. and my entire life changed. 2 years later, on the day after Christmas, Christmas weekend. So you know I ain't going to the ER on Christmas weekend. I had another one. And I realized that something had to change because my body was sending me really strong signals. And if things didn't change, bad things were going to happen in my body. I watched my father die. He was 56. He died of esophageal cancer, which if you've ever, that's one of the bad, I mean, there's no good cancers, but there's some that they can treat and there's some that they can't. And esophageal cancer is one that they can't. And my dad passed away after having symptoms for years, but he had no insurance. This was the early 2000s. He had no insurance. So it wasn't until basically he had to go by ambulance and they went, whoa, this is what we found. And he died 3 months later. My mom, for the most part, worked herself into an early grave. All the female members of my mother's family, apparently they tend to pass away about 68, 69 of heart issues. But I will also tell you that every person that has passed away so far at 68 or 69 of heart issues, worked their asses off their entire life. One was a nurse, one was a nurse's assistant. Grandpa dug ditches and did very hard labor. He was in the military. He was deployed during the World War. And the thing is, at some point, you wake up or you check out. And I saw again firsthand the hell my mother went through and the hell her body put her through because she literally worked herself to death. She was in poverty to the point where she couldn't afford her medications until I stepped in about 20 years after her diabetes diagnosis. And in part because I was an adult and finally could meet my mother on that level as an adult, but also I finally took the reins and said, whoa, this ain't working for you. let me see if there's something online. I had a computer with internet access. We found some help, but it was too late for her. I mean, she got 20 more years than she would have had, but she also died very young. Your body gives you wake-up signals. So if you're sitting there right now hearing what I'm saying, going, I have to put food on the table. I can't run off and chase my dreams. Now, first of all, whoa. I'm not telling you to quit your job tomorrow. As of this recording, I still have a day job. I am not telling you to abandon those responsibilities. I am telling you that I hear you. I hear where you're at. And I think it's time to start unpacking things so we can look deep inside ourselves to figure out how to make those changes that serve you. Because that's the power here. How to make the changes that serve you. How to make that happen. And sometimes it takes unpacking those internalized lessons that we took from our parents, from our grandparents. I come from farming stock, so there's a lot of hard work and get up and work all day, and, you know, that's been pounded into me. And there's things that we need to unpack about ourselves, about our body's abilities. There's ableism there. Even if you are not disabled, you still have internalized ableism because you're telling yourself, I can't be lazy, I can't do this, I can't do that. Stop it. That's ableism. That's internalized ableism. Don't do that. Instead, start to shift your mind patterns. When you start to reach inside, start asking yourself, what if? What if? What if I could do whatever I wanted to? What would I be doing? What job would bring me so much joy that I would rush out the door in the morning and go do it? And feel like I'm making such a big difference in the world, and I wouldn't want to retire. What would you want to be doing? Think about that. Because again, now we're starting to dig deep. We're starting to look at, okay, is this anxiety really anxiety? Or is this anxiety caused by socioeconomic factors? Is this anxiety driven by what you have to do and not anything that's inside your head? And I think these are really powerful questions to ask, hence why I have been talking about this for today's podcast. And I'm almost done. So again, thank you so much for bearing with me. But I think we have to start asking ourselves these questions. Is what I'm dealing with right now exactly what it appears to be? Or is it something else? One of the meditations that I do, one of the mantras, the English translation is, lead me from the unreal to the real. Am I living in the unreal and clouding myself by saying, hey, I have anxiety? Or am I looking under the hood here, looking into the situation and saying, no, I have anxiety on these times, on these terms. Let's see what else I can do to make this better for me. We're not ignoring things. You know, nobody is going off any meds. I can guarantee you my next dose is in an hour and a half. You know, I've got my eye on that clock because I want to take care of my body. Nobody is telling you to change anything, to walk out of your job. What I'm just telling you to do is just start asking yourself these questions, because I'm aware very painfully that we each have our lives, and that what you have to deal with right now may not be what I or anybody else have to deal with, but it is no less valid. It is no less valid. And so my goal as a spiritual life coach, my goal is somebody who wants to help you and help lead you from the unreal to the real, is to help you look inside yourself and examine those beliefs. And so I'll close by saying this. If you have come this far and you feel that you need mental health assistance, I have put resources on this podcast page for you. Please check with your doctor. Please check with your medical center. You can also use any number of text lines. There is help out there. It may take the determination of a powerful force to help you get to that help. It may not be an easy road to help, but help is out there for you. Likewise, if you're under medical supervision or taking medication, please don't stop. Please keep doing what you're doing and taking care of your body, because the world needs you. All I'm asking you to ask today is, how can I make this better for me? And how can I live closer to the calling of my heart so I can find my inner magic and sparkle? Don't forget to crow and flow. And if you have questions about what that means, that is also on my website. But I'm a firm believer in crowing and flowing.
Thank you for listening to The Chicken Yogi Show, the podcast that helps you find your inner power by connecting you to self and nature, hosted by The Chicken Yogi, Kit Kailstow. The Chicken Yogi Show is presented on the Akayem Radio Network. Learn more about Kit's work at chickenyogi.com. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and follow The Chicken Yogi on all social media platforms. Listen to all episodes and get show notes at podcast.chickenyogi.com. Thank you for listening.